Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. This is Dr. Alex Avila and Love University. We're back in session. I'm Dr. Avila, clinical psychologist, author, and speaker. And our purpose here in Love University is to help you learn how to love yourself, others, and a higher power. So we're looking at positive psychology. We're looking at relationships, self-esteem, and even the higher nature. So now we're getting into the holiday spirit. And I know some of you guys are getting ready and rushing around for the holidays. And one thing that comes up a lot in the holidays is this thing called loneliness. So today we're going to talk about the loneliness cure, what loneliness is and how to cure it. Because a lot of people suffer from the idea of loneliness, which is a lack of intimacy, lack of social connection. Now, there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. For example, solitude, they say, is the glory of being alone. Loneliness is the pain of feeling alone. Now, you know the feeling where you're in a big crowd of a room of people, but you feel lonely in there. Or you could even be in a relationship or marriage, and your partner turns their back on you after making love, and you feel that loneliness creep in. So it's a very internal feeling. Now, one good thing about loneliness is that it actually can be a signal for the need for connection. Think about it in a biological sense. You live in prehistoric times, and you live in a dangerous area, and there's some prehistoric animals. So if you're by yourself, obviously you want to be with people, and that loneliness is a signal to get together with people so you don't get eaten by the lion, right, or by the animal. So it's a desire to reconnect with people for safety, for comfort, for security. Now, there was a man who was lonely, and he sent his picture into a Lonely Hearts Club. They sent it back with a note attached that said, "We're not that lonely." A little humor there for you guys. Now, if you're lonely, you probably didn't laugh at that. But if you're not lonely, maybe you found that a little bit funny. But, you know, all of us at some point have a sense of loneliness or isolation internally. And there are different kinds of loneliness. For example, moving to a new place or a new school can create that feeling of being unique and lonely and separate from others. Another situation is the I'm different. Maybe you have a different faith or sexual orientation or political beliefs than the people around you. And you feel lonely. You feel like they don't understand me. You feel isolated. Or you could say there's romantic loneliness. Now, we talk a lot about here on compatibility and soulmates and relationships. So, you know, especially for the holidays, people want someone to be with, you know, New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day and other times. And if you don't have that, that can give you that feeling of being alone and lonely. And that's something we wanted to talk about. How about this? Does anyone here like animals, like dogs, for example? Reggie, you're nodding your head, our engineer. What kind of dog do you like? Are you into the Cocker Spaniels, the Chihuahuas, or the big dogs?
Pomeranian,
okay, Pomeranian, okay. You're never lonely with a Pomeranian. That's what I've heard. Mm-hmm. But some people love animals. They love dogs or cats, and then, you know, they feel lonely if, for example, you know, they have their dog dies or the cat dies, or maybe they live in an apartment and they can't really have an animal there. So that's one form of loneliness. And then there are people lonely because of lack of trustworthy friends. Maybe they feel their friends are backstabbers or unfaithful or unloyal, and they feel lonely because of that you know, their friends cannot be counted on. Or even family members. Sometimes your family member is not as loyal as you would want or not as loving or caring. So you could have even a big family and still feel lonely within that family. Now, the effects of loneliness are very strong in a negative way. People who are lonely often have a high level of depression. They have sadness, maybe even hopelessness. You know, they don't connect with people. And we have what's called the self-fulfilling prophecy, which means that the more we feel lonely, the more we isolate ourselves. You know, we don't return people's phone calls. We don't answer our texts. So now we feel even more lonely because nobody calls us anymore, right? Nobody connects with us because we're withdrawn. And we start to think, they don't really like me. You know, we start to say, nobody really cares about me. And now we withdraw further and further into our loneliness shell. It's like a cycle. I would say it's a pattern that happens. Another thing that happens is physically you suffer. They said that loneliness increases early death by 28%. We hear of the elderly people that are lonely and often, you know, die alone, sometimes even by suicide. There's more inflammation in your body, lower immune system, worse sleep. And interestingly enough, there's even a higher level of addiction among people who are lonely. There's a theory that addiction is not necessarily about wanting a chemical substance or even a person, if it's sex addiction or gambling, is that they need to bond with something. And if you don't have people to bond with in your life, love-wise, you choose an object or you choose an activity that's dangerous and harmful to you. But it's really a cry out for that bonding that we don't have as a lonely person. Hoarders, people that collect a lot of useless items and, you know, their whole house is full of stuff, which is a psychological disorder, often are lonely as well. And the loneliness could be, you know, the hoarding could be an attempt to fill their loneliness, right? In a sense, to fill the emptiness they have inside, but it doesn't really work. Often child abuse victims are also very lonely. They feel disconnected from their parents who abused them, and now as adults, they have a hard time trusting other people. They think other people are out to hurt them and not treat them properly. Now what happens this? Let's say we are lonely, let's say we're single, and we meet someone we like and fall in love with, and they do the same, and we get married. Does that cure our loneliness? You're shaking your head out there, right, Reggie, engineer? We know stories of this, unfortunate, what we call the empty marriage. At least 50% of marriages end in divorce, we know this, and out of those 50%, half of those are empty marriages, where they're basically together for the sake of the kids, for the sake of financial issues, you know, they're afraid of, you know, losing money if they get divorced, or maybe religious reasons, but there's no sex and there's no intimacy. It's an empty marriage, and they feel very lonely in those marriages. They make love and turn, you know, away from each other. They have different lifestyles, different lives, different schedules. One problem that we have in these kind of marriages is what's called a transactional conversation. Many times they only talk about stuff of the day, like practical things, like we got to pay the bills and fix something, or the kids, there's a soccer game. They don't talk about the intimate issues. How do you feel about certain things in life? How do you feel about us? You know, how do you feel? What are your goals? Those are important things that sometimes married couples forget to talk about, and they feel lonely as a result. Different schedules. They work, you know, one works the night shift, one works the day shift. They pick up the kids. They're, you know, basically missing each other all day long. Or maybe they're at home, and one of them is on their tablet, the other one on the computer. So again, they're not connecting. They're feeling detached from each other. And also, they lack open communication. Maybe one of them is hurt. Because they're frustrated with their sex life. They're not receiving what they want, but they don't say anything to their partner. As a result, they withdraw. Instead of talking about that, they kind of detach. You know, they go somewhere else, maybe meet someone else, and they don't really get into the core of what's wrong, and they feel lonely as a result. So how do we combat marriage loneliness? There are several ways to combat marriage loneliness. One is to initiate intimate conversations. Let's talk about things that really matter. Let's talk about our sex life, our married life, our spiritual practice, if we have one. What are our goals and passions and beliefs? You know, we got married for a reason. We want to make a difference in our lives and the lives of others. So what is that? You know, getting back in touch with that inner self, that inner power of the marriage. Now, if you got used to not talking about these things, your partner may say, well, what's wrong with you? Are you having an affair? Or are you having a midlife crisis or something? No, I just want to talk about the things that really matter. So eventually your partner will start to pick this up, and, you know, they will start to open up a little bit and, you know, be a little more vulnerable. Maybe they've been hurt by things you've said or done, and you've been hurt. And this is a way to heal those wounds by starting to talk about really important things in the relationship. Create shared experiences. Let's say they go to the opera. You may not like opera too much, but you might join them once in a while, right? Just, you know, to support them. Or maybe there's a TV show that you like, and they might want to come and watch your TV show, a favorite TV show. And it's a way to just kind of share things that you know, both of you may like, or maybe one of you likes more than the other. And find those commonalities. You guys used to go bowling or surfing or golfing or walking, and you don't do it as much anymore. But getting back to those favorite things you used to do. Also, for married couples, seeing things from their perspective. We call this in psychology empathy, putting yourself in the shoes of others. So maybe they are hurt, your partner, because you made a comment about their cooking, that you didn't appreciate their cooking or something, or, you know, they didn't appreciate something you did. And then there's resentment and anger, and you want to talk about that. And also you want to experience how they feel so you can maybe be a little bit different next time, be a little more sensitive or considerate, especially if they're the feeler personality. And we've talked about the feeling people who are more emotional and they take things more personally. Partners who are more logical are more analytical, and they can kind of detach themselves from that. So it really depends on the partner's styles. Now, aside from marriage, let's say in general, let's say that we're sitting here right now in our house, and it's, you know, holiday time, and maybe you're by yourself, or maybe There are people around you, but they're not really people you're connecting with. You feel lonely. How do we combat loneliness? This is a very powerful thing we need to work on. First, we need to realize that loneliness is a feeling, not a reality. Again, you could be with a lot of people, even have a lot of friends, but still feel lonely inside. So it's a perception. It's an emotional reaction. There's something that I call the pain mechanism in our brain, where our brain is easy to identify painful situations and things that causes distress. So anything that we perceive as difficult or perceive as attack against us, we're going to react. But the key is to separate yourself, your identity, from that momentary emotional pain. Even though I'm feeling lonely, I'm still a valuable person. I'm still worthy. I'm still attractive. I have value. Because many times we start to judge ourselves and nobody cares about us because we're not attractive enough. We're not interesting enough. Nobody likes us. So the key is to recognize that this feeling is a momentary feeling passing through your mind, just like a cloud is passing through a certain area. But pretty much the cloud will be gone. So you will be, in a cheery point of view at some point. Number two, ask yourself, what is missing in my life right now? Maybe it's an exercise program. Maybe it's a spiritual practice. Maybe it's being with other people that are like you, that enjoy your same activities. Now, we've talked before in the book I wrote, Love Types, and also Guide Types, the new book, that there are certain personality types, and these people like different things. For example, if you're a meaning seeker personality, you like psychology, philosophy, spirituality, so you might join a group, a meetup group, online group, that goes out to poetry readings, that does spiritual practices, meditation. If you're a security seeker, someone that likes tradition and the family, you might join some community organizations, PTA, things related to children or pets, groups that deal with those kind of things. If you're an excitement seeker, you're probably not listening to this because you're out partying somewhere, right? Having fun or skiing or scuba diving, but those kind of activities, thrill-seeking activities, outdoor activities, social things, nightclubs, comedy clubs, acting classes, things like that appeal to people like the excitement seekers. And if you're a knowledge seeker, you're the kind of person that loves Comic-Con, technology, science, entrepreneurship. So there are organizations that deal with that. So whatever your personality type is, and you can go to guidetypes.com, my website, and it applies for both male and female, you can figure out which of the four personality groups you belong to and what kind of people resonate with you and what kind of activities you should get involved in. So let's say you pick a group. Let's say it's meditation to heaven, okay? And you're a spiritual meeting seeker person. The first advice is actually go to the group, show up. You know the phrase, 50% of success is showing up. If you get a gym membership, a lot of people don't go to the gym even after they pay the money. So half of the problem is getting there. And if you're shy or lonely, you might say, I don't feel like going and no one's going to really like me there. But the key is to go. Because once you go, things can happen. You might meet the person you like. You might get some new knowledge. You might get some motivation. So show up at that meeting. That group meeting is number one. The other thing that's important is to be aware of how your body feels. Like maybe you go to the group and your neck is tight or your heart is fluttering or going fast. Your breathing is very quick. So you need to realize this and realize that your mind is creating this physical reaction. So you can slow yourself down, take a deep breath, exhale, and just kind of slow down your physical process and your mental process. And the more you get out and meet certain kind of people and get in certain kind of groups, you'll be able to have more command over your body reactions as well. Something else is important. Accept loneliness as an element that exists. People try to fight loneliness. They try to fight it. They try to numb themselves. Watching television, video games, maybe eating or drinking. But it's a temporary fix. Once all that is gone, guess what happens? You go back to the same state of loneliness you had before. And even worse, because now you're overweight, maybe you have a drinking problem, your eyes are blurry. So you've created more problems for yourself by the distractions that you use to take away the pain of loneliness. So look at the pain of loneliness as a temporary state. Be aware of it. Don't hide from it. Don't be afraid of it. It's just a temporary state that you will master. So that's very important to be aware of it. Another thing is have self-compassion. Care about yourself. Because many times people blame themselves when they're lonely. Well, there's something about me that people don't like. There's a character defect. I'm too shy. I can't talk to people. I'm ugly. I'm overweight. Whatever it might be. And as a result, they attack themselves. So the key is to learn how to love yourself. Be compassionate to yourself. Hey, you know, I have good qualities. I may not be a perfect 10, but I'm a 8.5. And I got a good brain, and I'm a caring and loving person. So whatever it is that you have inside you that's good, think about that. Resonate with it. Because that is one of the cures to loneliness, is to realize that you have value, you have worth as a human being. You have something you can give to others, but you have to love yourself first. And last but not least, this is one of my favorites, and we often talk about this idea, is to extend loving energy without expectation. Which means that we go out there and smile at people, and we help them. It could be a homeless person, or maybe just anybody we meet. Listen to them with full attention, without expecting anything back. We don't expect they're going to like us or be our friend or say anything good to us, but we do it because we're exercising our loving energy muscles. And the more we do this, the more good things will attract in our life. People will come to us. Good situations will come to us. And it almost becomes a paradox, what I call a reversal or paradox, which means that oftentimes what you want most is what you need to give the most. I say to a person that wants money, go out and give money to other people, you know, help the homeless or charity. That money will recirculate. If you need affection, love, or attention, give it to others. Why don't you go in that party and find that lonely person in the corner, that shy person, and go talk to them. Make them feel comfortable. Make them feel relaxed. Now, you're lonely too, so, you know, two lonely people seems like a good match, right? But the idea is that you're reversing the energy. Instead of being so worried about poor me, oh, I'm lonely and no one likes me. Well, no. I'm going to go to that person that is actually looking lonely. I'm going to say hello. I'm going to make a conversation. I'm going to give them some positive, loving energy. And guess what? All of a sudden, my mindset has changed. I'm not lonely anymore. And I've also helped someone be less lonely. So that is the power of what we're talking about here. Love University is really about reversing the things that have held us back. You know, the fears, the depressions, the anxieties, and having more of a positive mindset. Optimistic, grateful, and above all, love. Love is the key here. You know, the energy of love has resonance in many areas. It's not just an emotional term. It's not a romantic term. It's a real-world practical term that can give you power inwardly and outwardly. So I welcome anyone here to write to us at lovetypeforyou@aol.com. That's LoveType, the number 4, the letter U, at aol.com. Or call us at 310-226-8090. We're going to have some events coming up, networking with love, the dating masquerade, where everyone has a mask on and you get to meet people based on personality type, and other things, you know, any questions you have. And we're always looking for guests. If you want to be a guest on our show, we can definitely help you. We can keep you anonymous if you like, and really help you solve your relationship, self-esteem, and spiritual issues. So I will now bid you adieu. Put your notebook away, your pens and papers down, and class is now dismissed. Love University. Until the next time, have a wonderful holiday. See you soon.